Kaffee in seiner besten Form mit der neuen Cubo One Kapselmaschine von Chibo. In jeder Cubo-Kapsel steckt Spitzenkaffee aus besonderen Anbaugebieten. Für Espresso, Kaffeecrema oder Kaffee Grande auf Knopfdruck. Die neue Cubo One überzeugt mit Premium-Design, kompakter Größe und kleinem Einstiegspreis ab 29 Euro. Dank innovativer Press-Brew-Technologie wird jede Tasse besonders aromatisch mit samtiger Crema. Entdecke jetzt die Cubo-Kapselmaschinen in deiner Chibo-Filiale und auf chibo.de.
Coming up on Studios America, Leon Wolf joins us for an extended interview about his expose into COVID's origins. You're not going to want to miss this. Twitter, will it finally be held accountable for their unwarranted censorship of the New York Post and the Hunter Biden story? Probably not. That's a spoiler alert, but that's coming too. And we all have that one person in our lives who's a complete a-hole and is constantly mocking the deaths of unvaccinated coronavirus patients. I mean, that's in everybody's feed, right? Even if you don't have someone like that, the mainstream media has you covered. So let's do COVID death shaming.
Stu Does America.
Sometimes you do a show and it just helps you just to lose faith in all of humanity. And that's where we are today. Get ready, America. You're about to lose what little faith you had left in the fellow human being you might interact with on an average day. It's this whole thing. It's happening all over the place. You have to have noticed it by now. The media reveling, seemingly, in the fact that someone who was a coronavirus skeptic or a coronavirus vaccine skeptic dying from the coronavirus. It's the greatest thing in the world to some people in the media. And it's, revolting. This is just a basic sort of guideline of humanity here. If you are the type of person who's excited because someone you disagree with on vaccines is dead or dying or sick or got the coronavirus, you're a bad person. Dun-da-da! Yeah, it's really basic baseline rule of humanity. We root for people to be healthy and alive. I know it's a crazy idea, something we're going to work on in the future, but come with me on this little journey, shall we? Because this is going to be a lot of fun. Get ready to just have the warm cockles of your heart just spring into life here, because this is going to be, this is a tough one. Okay, let's start here. This is from Huffington Post, and they have the headline, "Daughter blames Tucker Carlson's misinformation for playing a role in dad's COVID-19 death." Playing a role. Okay, let's listen to the clip here. This is what she said on a show, again, on CNN. Just a random daughter and wife, I believe, of a guy who passed away from coronavirus. One of over 600,000 people, sadly, in this country who have died. Here is the exchange.
Why was he so hesitant to get vaccinated, Katie?
There's multiple reasons, I think. One of which was some of the media that he ingested. He wasn't by any means far right. He was right in the middle, and he consumed media from both sides. And just some of the misinformation on one of those sides made him hesitant. So he was going to wait for FDA approval, but by the time that Pfizer had been approved, it was already too late.
Oh,
Pfizer got the full FDA approval and your father was already sick.
He watched some Tucker Carlson videos on YouTube, and some of those videos involved some misinformation about vaccines, and I believe that that played a role.
Look, it's two kids, obviously, in that clip, kids of this dad. And it's incredibly difficult to watch that because they're in real pain. And you know what? Look, I think there is a lot of misinformation out there about vaccines. We've talked about it a million times on this particular program. But when you listen to what she said she watched some of these YouTube videos. And so he decided to wait for FDA approval of the vaccine. Well, the FDA waited and waited and waited with no good reason not to approve the vaccine for a really long time. And this is probably not a story that is completely unique. Is that Tucker Carlson's fault that the FDA didn't approve the vaccine? What would Tucker Carlson have to do with that? But the media pounced on it because the media loves these stories. They can act all somber and sad, but what they want is to put it in the face of someone who they disagree with. And if you don't believe me, you think this is a one-time thing, it's really not. Let me just give you a couple of examples here. Here's Phil Valentine, radio host who scoffed at COVID, then urged his followers to get vaccinated, dies. Now, Phil Valentine, we've talked about on the show. He was a big-time talk show host. I mean, certainly on the top 100 list that they release every year. He's a guy who was a national talk show host, a figure of notoriety. You could understand this being noted. When you look into what Phil Valentine said about vaccines, I mean, largely they were not anti-vax type claims, but they wanted to use that as a story to talk about. But that one, he's a big personality. I can understand why that one would get covered. How about this one? A trio of conservative radio hosts died of COVID. Will their deaths change vaccine resistance? Okay, well, they're talk show hosts. And the other two, other than Phil, were not quite as prominent maybe, but still talk show hosts. They were opinion guys. They gave their opinion. Okay, maybe you can justify covering those. How about this? A nurse's training didn't protect her from vaccine misinformation. Now she's one of the victims of COVID-19. That's from CNN. Good Morning America. Unvaccinated single mom dies of COVID-19, leaving four children behind. A terrible story, but is it national news? Not typically, right? That wouldn't normally be national news. How about this? Anti-vaxxer mother and daughter die from COVID in Belfast Hospital. Okay. How about this? From YouTube, Alabama Pickers, couple known for reselling and vaccine opposition, both dead of COVID. Washington Post, a mom of four who died of COVID after her husband makes one final wish, make sure my kids get vaccinated. Unvaccinated couple die of COVID-19 hours apart, leaving behind two teens. Unvaccinated pregnant nurse who died of COVID wrote she was praying for a miracle in final post. And you like this one, too, because they put quotes around praying just to make sure you know. I mean, people doesn't support the praying part of this. This is just her. These are her words. She was praying. We can go through this. Honestly, there's hundreds of these that we could found. They've come to the point now where they put together an entire website called SorryAntiVaxxer.com where they just rotate through regular people who may have said something, I don't know, a bit skeptical about COVID or the vaccines at some point or another. And then they just put them on the site to further the grieving of, I guess, their family members. I don't know what the purpose of this is. They say it's to get people vaccinated. Now, of course, we don't know what would have happened in the alternate reality where they were vaccinated. But as we've covered on this program, I think there's a good chance they would have been able to avoid the most negative consequences here. However, you can make those arguments without dancing on people's graves. And over again, the media continues to approach these stories this way. Hey, look, we've been yelling at you to get vaccinated. You don't listen. Now look what happened to you, sucker. That's what they want to convey to people over and over and over again. What kind of person sits around and thinks about life this way? What kind of person does this? And I guess the answer is almost everyone in the media. Almost everyone in the media seems to go down these exact roads. And these narratives are not random, guys. They're not random. You know, I've told this story, I think, once or twice before, but I was on a call it's a media call for about statistics about COVID. And, you know, they were helping, trying to get media members to understand what these statistics meant, how they were calculated. You know, I live a really exciting life, let me tell you. And the reporters were discussing what they were learning here. And what they said was like, look, you know, maybe given the information that had just been conveyed to the group, maybe what we should do is try covering more stories of family members who are suffering from the bad consequences of this. In other words, it wasn't like an idea of how to move the readership, how to move the consumers of media. Maybe we should focus on this type of story. That stuff does happen. I mean, it does happen. I mean, people are people, and they get into this business a lot of times because they want to move people's opinion. And they pick stories like this because they want to be able to come with a specific outcome. And in this case, I don't think it's trying to get unvaccinated people vaccinated. Maybe it is in some cases. You know, I think you look at these stories and they're tough to read. I mean, these are, as you see, a bunch of people, sometimes they're younger, on the younger side, sometimes they have kids. And to watch that family go through that, and, you know, for something that, you know, may or may not have been a necessary outcome of the pandemic, it's really tough to read. And I think everybody, at least everyone I know, just feels sad for the families. You know, you feel terrible that something like this happened. We're in the middle of a pandemic. A lot of really crappy things have happened. But there's another side to this, the side where it's like, hey, we are putting, this is essentially like almost like a mic drop of a tweet, right, to the left. They are sitting back and saying, you know what? We've been telling you, don't be an idiot. Don't ignore science. Well, look at these idiots. They ignored science. Please click on my dumb news story where we can gloat about it. Gloating about other people suffering is about the lowest form of humanity that is available to you. If that's what you're doing it wrong. You're doing life wrong. There's a, you know, I know that you get into political fights with people all the time. We, you know, we say all sorts of, I mean, I've got a pen right here that says Nancy Pelosi sucks. I'm not above saying things that are offensive to the other side. But what I will say is that, you know, when life and death of an average, regular person is on the line, isn't there any part of you that stops and thinks about the effect on the people around them? Isn't there any part of you that gets there? When we talk about, you know, things like, you know, abortion and the abortion law here in Texas, is there any moment you think about the people that aren't here because of that law? This is like, there is a real thirst in this country right now, in the media and online, to be able to win an argument at expense of completely disintegrating your own humanity. When you look at someone you don't even know dying and leaving child survivors, and to you, you think, hey, here's a good one to tweet. That makes you a bad person. Whether you're right about the vaccines, whether you're wrong about the vaccines, whether you're right about COVID, whether you're wrong about COVID, whether you're right about universal healthcare, whether you're wrong about it, none of that matters because you can't clear the most basic test of being a human being, having some level of empathy for innocent people and what's going on around them. If you can't clear that hurdle, you're not even clearing the hurdle of being a human being. You're subhuman. So next time you think it's going to be a great idea to retweet one of these stories, think about it for a second. Think about if that's the person you want to be. I expect very few in this audience feel that way. But, man, it's more widespread than I really want to consider. Back in a second. So let's talk about things that have fundamentally changed the way we live. You know, I love capitalism. I love capitalism, what it brings to our society. Things that disrupt the way that we go through, you know, life. I mean, streaming services. Remember when you used to get an envelope from Netflix and they had like a DVD in it? And that was like, whoa, they'll mail you movies. Do you remember this? It's not that long ago. We have these innovations that sort of turn things upside down. You get streaming. Netflix is, I remember when Netflix was like, oh, we're only going to do streaming now. And it seemed crazy. It seemed like they were jumping the gun by a lot. And all of a sudden, it's the only thing we ever do. Ladder is an insurance company who basically took the life insurance industry and flipped it upside down and shook out all the inefficiencies. Before Ladder, if you wanted to get life insurance, you had to drive across town and sit through a sales pitch and fill out, you know, a ton of paperwork and all that stuff. And then it's like 6 to 8 weeks to find out if you've been approved. It's a freaking hassle. Plus, you get the zillion phone calls from everyone trying to bundle all of your other insurances together. Now with Ladder, you can get fast, affordable term life insurance without even leaving home. It's 100% digital when you apply for $3 million or less in coverage. No doctors, no needles, no paperwork. If you're between the ages of 20 and 60, if you need coverage and you want to team up with a company that is redeeming life insurance, choose Ladder. Go to ladderlife.com/stew today. See if you're instantly approved. It's ladderlife.com/stew. Remember the slash stew part of the address, because that's how they know you like this stupid show. ladderlife.com/stew. I'm happy to welcome back to the program Leon Wolf. He's the managing editor of The Blaze and one of the authors of the new comprehensive six-part expose on the origins of COVID. It's called Cash, COVID, and Cover-Up. I'll be tweeting out a link to his work shortly. Be sure to check it out. Leon, how's it going?
It's going good. How are you, Stu?
Really well, really well. I mean, this is a really good series, and it goes really in depth. I feel like you've done a public service here, because there are so many names, there's so many people we may not be familiar with, not to mention adding on to this, there's so many internet rumors and lies and try to dig through to get to what's actually true. You put this together in a really understandable way, and it's great work.
Well, thank you. You know, we still have three more parts to go. We got three down, three to go. But you're right. The volume of it is really quite daunting. And, you know, one of the things that Chris and I did when we started this was to try to make a lot of it, you know, digestible, to wade through the signal, you know, versus the noise, and try to find what was reliable, you know, what we could put out there, what we could say confidently that we know, what questions still need to be asked, and still make it in a digestible format. Our latest entry was a little over 5,000 words, so I'm not entirely sure how successful we were at that, but probably still shorter than a lot of the material that you read out there. And I hope that people, I'm encouraged to see a lot of other places, even places that are not like typically associated with being like conservative / libertarian media, are picking this up. Washington Post, of all places, had a really good piece a couple of weeks ago on the gain of function controversy that I thought was shockingly fair and thorough. So it's getting out there slowly but surely, I think.
Yeah, it's taken a while. You and Chris Pendolfo have done a great job putting this together. I want to give you a couple clips here to the audience, and we can talk about them. Because that the lack of media interest early on was really perplexing. You guys write, the national media spent endless hours speculating without any factual basis about the context with Russia of every obscure member of Trump's team. Surely they would have interest in whether the man who was fast becoming the face of the Trump response to coronavirus was complicit, even indirectly, with the release of the virus into the world. It turned out they would not. They had no interest. It's almost like, it feels like we're going back in a time warp, that, you know, Fauci was associated with Trump's response. I mean, we've got such a long journey here, but there was never that, like, right, salacious sort of, you know, bloodlust to go after a Trump official with Fauci. He was able to avoid that.
It's really and truly incredible for somebody who covered the entirety of the Trump administration. And you think about not just Trump, but everybody who is in his cabinet, from Betsy DeVos to, you know, Rex Tillerson, you know, on down the line, Barr, were all continually called before Congress and grilled about the most inconsequential things. Mm. And here you had probably the defining issue of Trump's presidency in the middle of an election year, and the face of his team, like his response team, there was at least a question as to whether he was connected with the release of the virus to the public. Now, I was just amazed that no one seemed to be interested in even looking at that, given the level of interest in ridiculous things that turned out to be nothing over the course of Trump's presidency. And I think that what happened, as we kind of talk about, is that rightly or wrongly, Fauci kind of became the guy that liberals hung the entire coronavirus response edifice upon. You know, the masks, the social distancing, the shutdowns. They just, if Fauci fell, they believed that all of that would fall. He became the even though he worked for Trump, at least nominally, they believed that if Fauci went down, that all of these things that he was standing for would go down with him. And so they just developed this protect him at all cost mentality on the belief that that was basically the only thing keeping those things going. And it's unfortunate. And I think that it's important that we could divorce that both on both sides. I don't think that people should be asking this question of Fauci, just in the hopes that it will get all of the things that he stands for out of the way, like the masks and the, you know, the vaccines or whatever it is that people don't like that he's pushing. This is an important question. This is the most important story event of our lifetimes, I think. And the most important thing out of everything, like more important than the masks, more important than the vaccines, more important than anything else, I think, is making sure it doesn't happen again. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, I think that should be number one in everybody's minds. And to the extent that it might have been done by research that our tax dollars funded, we should be aggressively getting to the bottom of that to figure out what we need to do better next time so that that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
And I'm perplexed to not see that response happening.
Yeah, and you guys go into this quite a bit as you go through the series. Let's go into gain of function a little bit here, because this is something that I think people, just like, as you point out in one of the pieces, remember back to January 2020 when Anthony Fauci wasn't famous. But it's true. It's like it feels like another world. Gain of function is a new term to most people. And all of a sudden, people are expected to be experts on it. But this has a background going back to 2011. You guys write about this. Whatever the possible benefits of gain of function research, it obviously comes with risk. One particular experiment conducted in 2011 involved so much obvious risk that many research scientists began to raise the alarm about the possibility of a catastrophe if a lab accident occurred. This is people don't realize that this went back to the Obama administration. I think there's some general knowledge about Obama maybe banning it for some reason. But like this sort of research has been really controversial among scientists for a good amount of time.
Yeah, it really has. There's a guy from Rutgers, Richard Ebright, who's been doing a human's work talking about this for years and years and years. And he's on Twitter. I recommend everybody follow him. He's been a great resource and source of information about this. He's one of the ones raising the alarm. This research back in 2011, they took a strain of bird flu that was estimated to have a 60% mortality rate. 60%. 60, right. More than half fatality rate, and made it transmissible among ferrets, which apparently are the closest relative to humans in terms of replicating virus pathogenicity. So they made it basically one step away from being transmissible among humans. And scientists, this was before this, you know, this pandemic, this was before this was a political issue. This is just scientists. Many scientists were like, hey, wait a minute. They were going to publish a study. Here's how we did it. And many scientists were like, you can't put that in a published scientific journal. What if, you know, terrorists or Al-Qaeda got a hold of this and figured out how to do it? You know, that would obviously, they would have in their hands a weapon that could kill more than half the world before we got a handle on this. And so there was a tremendous amount of pushback. There was a tremendous amount of concern. And yeah, the Obama administration, you know, actually banned this research. And chief leading the pushback of saying, you know, hey, no, we shouldn't ban it. We need to keep doing it was Fauci and his boss, like his nominal boss, you know, Collins. I guess he technically works for Collins, even though he's paid more than Collins. You know, this is like and so he has been at the forefront of this, of pushing back and saying that this was necessary. So I think that even though his actual connection to the potential research that may, we don't know. I stress to say, and we try to say this repeatedly, we don't know. And we won't know probably, maybe ever, thanks to the efforts that the Chinese have undertaken to bury the truth, which we're going to get into a lot in the next part of the series. But his connection personally was rather tenuous to the actual research project that may have been at the root of this. But he certainly has been at the forefront of aggressively arguing that this kind of research should continue. And so I think that is probably the reason that he has felt a level of concern and wanting to, you know, cover his butt about this throughout the course of the last year and a half.
Yeah, you know, and Leon, like he had people who are on the left who might love Fauci today need to realize that, like, you know, Barack Obama tried to shut this down. And he just evaded their efforts to do so. You go through this in the piece as well. The Obama administration's moratorium contained a clause granting exemptions, quote, if the head of funding agency determines research is urgently necessary to protect public health or national security. And NIH Director Collins' discretion, virtually every gain of function study that applied for an exemption reportedly received one. The moratorium only existed on paper, and officials at the NIH worked behind the scenes to have even those illusory restrictions of funding for gain-of-function studies revoked. This is the problem, is they set up a situation where they had an exemption if they said it was okay. All right. The people who wanted this research to continue just were able to continually pass themselves through this little loophole that they called an exemption, and all this research just kept going.
Right. And this is not, and I think that it's important for people to understand, this is not just us. This is not just Leon Wolf and Chris Pandolfo saying this. All of that information was confirmed by reporting from the Washington Post. So, I mean, people, for whatever reason, don't want to listen to us. And I would encourage everyone, especially all of our liberal friends, to go read that Washington Post article and look for one specific thing, because I read it at some great length. And look at it and look at the number of times that the Washington Post attempted to get comment from people in CDC and NIAID, NIH, various government health agencies, and were stonewalled. Now, it's one thing for people, you know, in the Biden administration not to return my emails asking for comment about this other thing. You know, it's another thing entirely for multiple, and it was over and over again. So-and-so would not comment. So-and-so would not respond to our comments, to the Washington Post. And I think that it's indicative of the fact that these agencies have just kind of gone turtle a little bit. I think that they hope that if they just crawl into their shell, that everybody will forget about this and it will all go away, you know, by the time that the Biden administration is over. And who knows, they might be right, because the difficult thing about this is it's hard to kind of get into the particulars about this without talking about some scientific concepts that tend to make people's eyes, you know, kind of glaze over a little bit. But it's an important thing, and I hope that people will understand at least enough to know that questions should be asked.
Yeah, in a very serious way. Okay, well, hang tight for one second, Leon. We're going to come back in a second. I want to leave people with how you ended part two of your investigation here, because it goes to the motivation. Why did all this happen? Why did they want to cover this up so much? You're right. And so, faced with the threat of the extinction of their entire profession, the world's prominent virologists, joined by the man who was responsible for funding so many of them, sat down to formulate a response. We'll get into that response next. We're back with more with Leon Wolf, managing editor of The Blaze. They're a very important series him and Chris Pandolfo put together for TheBlaze.com, Cash, COVID, and Cover-Up. There's three parts out now. It's a six-part series. It can bring you really through all of this. Because I think, Leon, people have this general understanding of the concept of what may have happened here, right? Fauci was delivering funding to some of these organizations. They were doing research that could have resulted in this. And there was some squashing of it in the media. You guys go into real depth on how the cover-up kind of came together. And it's really, without understanding the detail of it, it's hard to overstate how bizarre it was. I mean, it was really this strange, incestuous process where the doctors and the scientists who were being implicated in this potential scandal were also the ones allowed to exonerate themselves.
Yeah, it's something that would really not happen in any other walk of life. And I think that the only reason that it's been able to happen in this is because it's a subject about which people don't have like a basic level of understanding. You talk about some of the biology and the chemistry involved with tinkering around with viruses, you know, most people are not going to be able to grasp. And that's one of the things, quite frankly, that kept me from digging into this story sooner than I did was, you know, it gets hard. Like, they put out these papers, the Lancet letter and the paper, The Proximal Origins of SARS-CoV-2. And unless you really are dedicated to sitting down and digging through with a dictionary handy to even understand what they're saying, much less put a critical eye towards, is this correct or not? So it's definitely is a challenge for the average person to undertake, but you know, it can be an important one, and I think that's what's allowed them to get away with it, because I think that people have not understood, additionally, the connections, though. They haven't understood that it's a very small community. Like the number of people worldwide who are scientists who study this kind of things and who make these chimeric viruses is really pretty small. It's a relatively small community. So they might not understand, you know, how is Dashik connected with Ralph Baric? How is Ralph Baric connected with Ji Shengli? How are they all connected with Fauci? You know, they appear on the surface to be this group of just independent, highly respected scientists. But really, when you start to understand the relationships, they're all buddies and they're all in this thing together. And I think that that's the important thing that you touched on at the end of last period. Even if it hadn't been any taxpayer funding, even if there was no connection between NIAID directly and the work that was going on at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, which, by the way, $800,000 is a lot of money to you and I, but maybe not so much to a government agency, right? And the overall scope of their budget, it's not a huge piece of what they were funding. But the point is, if people found out that scientists were doing this kind of work, monkeying around with viruses to make them more contagious, and lo and behold, one of those viruses got out to a lab worker and caused millions of people worldwide to die, even if you take the funding angle out of it, they understood that would be the end. That's the end of their whole way of life. The public outcry demanding a shutdown of this entire industry would be overwhelming. Right? I mean, I think it would be. I would assume that. So that's, you know, where I think this comes from.
And again, if you want to look at the best possible light on this, I mean, you know, they think this is important research. It's not even just them protecting their industry. Like, they think this is important research, might do good at some point. They can't allow this to be the perception. And they acted like they could not allow it to be the perception. Let me give this is part 3-2, guys. Dashik, one of the scientists you mentioned, worked in the background to recruit more colleagues and associates to sign his statement. There were several the Lancet letter was one of them, several efforts to call essentially the lab leak theory a conspiracy. This particular one was intended to authoritatively discredit the lab leak hypothesis. Baric, another one of the scientists, a leading gain of function researcher, was also consulted for the draft. But Dashik told him it would be best if he didn't add his name to it, so he has some distance from us and therefore doesn't work in a counterproductive way. Baric agreed in reply, writing, "Otherwise, it looks self-serving and we lose impact." This is manipulating the news is what it is, and they knew what they were doing. They understood if they were essentially advocating for their own innocence, no one would buy it. So they tried to do it behind the scenes, and it's all caught on these emails. There's no question that they did this. This is a known.
Yeah, and it's really galling to some respect that so many of these emails remain entirely redacted. I really feel like in the public interest, almost everything that is currently redacted should be unredacted. The stakes here are just too high. And I understand, you know, look, I'm an attorney by background. I definitely understand the benefits of allowing people to, speak their opinions freely without fear that they're going to be put under the public microscope so many, years later. People might not understand the context. But all of these discussions that these scientists had, we know maybe less than 10%, because of the extent of the redactions. Like, if you've looked at the documents, I mean, there's just page after page, just wholly and entirely redacted, entire emails, except for the to and from fields redacted, like that go on for two or three pages. It's absolutely shocking. And it's equally shocking to some respect that, and this is one of the things that we mentioned in our piece, you know, Fauci works for, you know, the top of his chain of command is Donald Trump at the time that all of this is happening. There is no indication in any of these communications that the president, the vice president, anyone higher up in the administration than Fauci himself was made aware of these discussions, that they were happening, what the substance of them was. You know what? But I don't see anywhere that the president of the United States was ever informed that these scientists from all over the world were frantically discussing the possibility that this virus might have been, you know, leaked from this lab, might have been generated in a lab. And I'm not saying necessarily as a bioweapon, but just as part of like some experiment, gone wrong, and it got out. And that's shocking. That ought to be shocking to us, I think. It's worse to me than the thing that General Milley is accused of doing, I think. because it's, I think, just a more important issue, just because of the gravity of what's happened with this coronavirus pandemic.
Yeah, and I think you could understand, like, some redactions. Like, if the redactions of some of the stuff that went on with Russia, for example. Well, this foreign affairs. Like, if there was documents that came out about, you know, Biden's handling of the Iran nuclear deal, you could see why a lot of that would be redacted. Here, you know, unless they're talking about China leaking the virus, what's the international risk here? You know, there's no reason to be redacting 90% of these documents when we're talking about a virus and how our own country decided to try to handle it, unless they're protecting people. And it does seem like that's part of it.
I agree. I can't think of a feasible reason for it. I mean, are they protecting information that might, you know, lead to the creation of a bioweapon? I can't see that. Are they giving away some state secret that would compromise United States national security? I don't know what the argument is for the redactions. And it's interesting to me. I saw about a week and a half ago, actually, a reporter for The Nation, which is, you know, a borderline communist publication, is now going to court and trying to challenge a lot of these redactions. So there's just a public interest right to know. And I think that should transcend right, left, center, libertarian. I think everybody has a right to know at this point. After all of the deaths and the sickness and the misery that's come with this pandemic, the public has a right to know how this happened. And how dare these people convene in secret, not inform their superiors, not inform us, the public, and even a year and a half later, we have no idea 90% of what they said.
It's amazing. I mean, I remember when the Enron emails came out, there were a lot of people like talking about affairs. Maybe they're just there. Maybe everyone was sleeping with each other and they're just doing it for personal protection. I don't know. I want to give you one more part here, because of looking at sort of this incestuous peer review process. This is something amazing that you caught in part three of the report. Barrick, again, one of the scientists we've been talking about, was consulted beforehand about what the paper should say. This is supposedly a critique that could involve Barrick himself. According to emails unearthed by U.S. Right to Know, Barrick was provided with an advance copy of the paper by Sue and asked for comments and revisions, a paper that could have been about him. Perhaps understanding how bad such an arrangement would look, Barrick responded to Sue's request that he review the paper by saying, "Sure, but I don't want to be cited as having commented prior to submission." Sue agreed to keep Barrick's name out of the paper, and Barrick agreed to redline the paper that would exonerate him. This, in any other context, is a massive scandal, Leon.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking. You know, Ralph Barrick, for your watchers who don't know, Ralph Barrick is pretty much the Michael Jordan of coronavirus gain of function research. Okay. He is like the very top of this field. And the reason that he's so central to this story is that he trained the head researcher at the Wuhan Institute of Virology, Zhi Shengli, the so-called bat lady, the Chinese bat lady. I didn't come with that name for she, that's her name for herself, by the way. He trained her how to do it. And the general understanding is that when the moratorium came down in the United States, they just moved the research over to China. So I have no proof that Ralph Barrick personally did anything in connection with this or anything at all. But he is the person in the United States who would be the most number one brunt of pointed questions being asked if it turned out that this virus did in fact leak from the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and in fact that it was engineered, because he's the one who taught him how to do it. He's also, in addition to that, I mean, he's just a giant in this field. Like I said, the average person has no idea who Ralph Barrick is. Everybody in this field knows who Ralph Barrick is. So there's an institutional desire to protect probably the most prominent scientist in this entire field. And so the paper that would serve basically to exonerate him above anybody else in this entire country is given to him to edit and revise before it's published. It's not something you would find it being accepted anywhere else, but it's not. Nobody seems to bat an eye about it for the most part.
Amazing. This is a piece you have to read. Cash, COVID, and Cover-Up. Part 1, 2, and 3 are out now. 4, 5, and 6 are on the way. Chris Pandolfo along with Leon Wolf, managing editor of The Blaze. Make sure you check that out. We'll tweet it out as well from our Twitter page. Leon, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you.
All right. Do you like have to have a great snack sometime in the day? You're running out of. You're a little hungry. You've come to the end of your rope. It's time to just down like 3 Milky Way bars, right? That's what you do. No, you don't have to do that. Go to Built Bar instead. Built Bar is here to save the day. They've got all sorts of great flavors, mint brownie, double chocolate, cookies and cream, salted caramel, coconut, all sorts of great flavors. I think they have 9 of them that come in the mixed box. You can get that. They just came out with some like banana, almost like a banana pudding flavor, I think. That was like they had these puffs. They're like Charleston Chews. They've got everything. Just go to built.com. You'll find out these are all healthy. They're not just delicious candy bar type things. They're actually good for you. Stew15 is the promo code to save 15% off your first order. Promo code is Stew15 at built.com. You'll get 15% off now at built.com with the code Stew15. Here's a weird story. Ben Schreckinger's, Biden's, the first family's 50-year rise to power. Took him 50 years. It's out today. It's a new book. Finds evidence that some of the purported Hunter Biden laptop material is genuine. What? Including 2 emails at the center of last October's controversy. What? A person who has independent access to Hunter Biden's emails confirmed he did receive a 2015 email from a Ukrainian businessman thanking him for the chance to meet Joe Biden. Same goes for a 2017 email in which a proposed equity breakdown of a venture with a Chinese energy executive includes the line, quote, 10 held by H for the big guy being Joe Biden. Emails released by a Swedish government agency also match emails in the leaked cache, and 2 people who corresponded with Hunter Biden confirmed emails from the cache were genuine. As Tyler Carden points out, a reminder, Twitter and Facebook were so convinced this true story was fake news, they banned it from their platforms. Twitter went further and actually suspended the New York Post account for accurately reporting a story of great public interest during a general election. Look, we all know Hunter Biden has lost approximately 143,000 laptops across the country. It is legitimately incredible how crazy that story has been. You can be part of it. You can have your own Hunter Biden laptop with a new Hunter Biden laptop case at HunterBidenLaptopCase.com. Yes, it's a laptop case. It's real. It says property of Hunter Biden on it. Your friends will love it. You will love it. And hopefully, it doesn't mean you're going to lose your laptop as frequently as Hunter Biden. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and like and do all the things you're supposed to do. Make us one of your favorites. That will help us out as well. This comment comes in from yesterday's show. I agree. Since Tony is back together, all COVID restrictions should be removed immediately so we can uplift our spirits. It's true. Look, if the San Francisco mayor says it's true, then it's true. Also, make sure to review the program wherever you happen to listen to us on podcast. 5 stars is the appropriate number of stars. Great show as always. Glad I found all you guys and gals on the Blaze. Ooh, that hurts. That ignores all of our non-binary hosts. So please fix that on the review. But thank you so much for leaving it. Remember, when you leave a good review for us, it's not only good for us, it hurts other podcasts. And that's the most important thing. Okay, so here's what happened. A couple people, they're in New Zealand, they're in Auckland, they're in level 4 restrictions. They get pulled over. They've got contraband in the back of the car. What is it? KFC. Yes, we've come to the point of the pandemic where people are smuggling Kentucky Fried Chicken in their trunks. That's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. And look, there have been moments where I would have broken all sorts of laws for fast food, so I'm with you on that. Plus, a Taco Bell is usually attached. Makes it even better. Look, if your country's gang members are starting to smuggle fast food instead of methamphetamine, you've probably gone a little too far with your lockdown requirements. I'm just saying. I'm throwing that out there. Who knows? We will see you tomorrow. Good night.
Sehr gut, sehr gut, sehr gut.
Sehr gut?
Wieso Steuer ist sehr gut? Das sagen ganz viele.
Cool, wer sagt das?
Stiftung Warentest, Computerbild, Focus Money, Chip, Finanztipp, such dir was aus.
Mega, aber das ist doch bestimmt kompliziert.
Nö, einfach Foto von der Lohnsteuerbescheinigung machen und fertig.
Klingt sehr gut.
Ist sehr gut. Hol dir dein Geld zurück mit Wieso Steuer.